Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Hello and welcome to the Friday Special, a podcast by Guitar Nerds. Each week I'm going to have a new guest from the world of guitars, amplification and effects pedals. We have brands and producers and musicians. I am your host, Joe Branton. This week I'm joined by Jay Cross.
Hello.
And wonderfully, Kevin Equitz from Equitz Guitars.
Hey there.
Hey, exactly, and thank you very much, Jay, for on the form spelling the Equitz phonetically for me. We've been speaking about this for about 10 minutes beforehand, but I have been pronouncing it wrong this entire time. So thank you very much, Kevin, for your understanding of mispronunciation.
No worries, Joe Brontan.
So it's cracking to have you on the podcast. Obviously, on this series, we want to kind of talk to the brands who we think make really cool stuff. And Equitz Guitars are a really interesting little custom shop that make kind of wonderfully retro come modern instruments. And you do everything built to order, and you make everything yourself as well.
Thank you. It's very kind of you to say so. Yeah, essentially, that's right. That's kind of what I was going for, was to pull from like classic lines and forms and designs and shapes that we are used to seeing in guitars, but try to rearrange them in a way that was a bit more like, you know, fresh and new. And as far as like building everything, not so far as to like mill my own hardware, or I don't really wind pickups or anything yet, but as far as the woodwork and all that,
it's a completely a one-man operation, which is cool. It's a really interesting thing to have to do, or a really difficult thing to have to do, to be able to take classic models, as you say, and kind of try and give them a modern twist and give them an edge, so you're not just replicating something exactly that's come before, but you're still hitting all those aesthetic points that people want to see.
Yeah, sure, trying to. And it's great with the network of other builders out there, you know, that the feedback has been great. Being able to kind of trade designs back and forth with other builders and get their take on it. So the builder community really has a lot to do with, I think, at least my approach to the designs and all that. You know, a lot of what I've learned or try to put in place was, you know, being inspired by someone else. And it is tough too, on the other hand, like to find that fine line between unique and derivative. You know, I mean, I guess it's not hard to make something unique, but to still have it be aesthetically pleasing and desirable, like it's hard not to copy someone else unintentionally. There's several designs that, you know, I've put together and it's like, man, why does that look so familiar? And then sure enough, I'll see it somewhere else. I'm like, oops, I accidentally copied someone and I didn't even try to. Like, you start moving lines around to where it looks like they make sense. And I think the reason why they make sense is because, you know, you've seen them before. And, you know, for the most part, a lot of the contours in a guitar body are there for functional reasons. And so it's not always practical to just, you know, put a chunk of wood here and scoop another part out there, you know, like the shape does tend to, you know, there's certain parts that are just always going to be there. So yeah, anyway, yeah, it's fun. And the design angle of it was, that was, I guess, what drew me to guitar making. And then all the rest was just kind of a byproduct.
Yeah, I guess it's because it's such a well-beaten track. You know, trying to make something that's retro-styled means that you can't actually reinvent that wheel too much, because you can't move away from those sort of aesthetic things, you know, that much. And especially with it being kind of the sort of modern retro-style guitars, there are, like, as you say, there are a lot of builders out there making that sort of thing at the moment. It's become, like, the sort of retro modern guitar has become a really popular thing. So I think a lot of players would love a retro style guitar, but everyone knows how badly, you know, sort of an old, I don't know, like, you know, Silvertone or something is going to play, or even, you know, even old Fenders. You know, when you buy an old guitar, you're writing off a certain amount of playability, which is, you know, kind of where a new guitar comes in. How long has Equits Guitars been a business? How long have you been a functional sort of guitar making operation for?
It looks like about 4 years as far as being Equits Guitars. Technically, I've been dabbling in this for more than 10, which makes it sound like, you know, I've got this whole host of, you know, experience and all these previous builds in my past. But for a while I was doing maybe one a year, at the best, you know, and those were like parts casters and other things just to kind of get into it and, you know, learn a bit and try something new out. And gradually, little by little, it was like, and taking that whole kit, that parts kit, and maybe just making my own body, but still working with the neck that was already fretted and everything. And then it was like, well, let me try building the neck, but let me get a slotted fretboard so I don't have to cut the fret slots. And, you know, little by little, working my way up to, you know, having like all the different elements of the construction. And so once I was able to start building like existing, like known shapes, you know, from basic, whatever, rectangular pieces into, you know, yeah, guitars. Then working with other builders, guys like Paul Roney and Doug Cower and some of these other builders that were very inspirational to me. You know, there was a lot of encouragement to like, okay, well, there are a lot of other people making Telecasters and making these other things, you know, what else can you do with this? And that's why I was saying, like, the design side of it was what, you know, it's like, oh, hey, great idea. Let me try my hand at designing the shape and all that. And designing is, I don't know, I'd even, in my case, I'd use it loosely. It's a matter of, like, you know, finding the curves, you know, favorite elements of different guitars and trying to assemble them in a way that makes sense structurally and visually, in a way that is supposed to be like an homage or a compliment to those forms, and not be like derivative and be like, oh, well, here you go, it's already done for me, let me just cheat. You know, I wasn't trying to take any shortcuts, but really feeling like that we have a proclivity to, you know, certain shapes, like the Telecaster, the Stratocaster, Les Paul, those designs have not changed in so long because they didn't need to. You know, they look great and they work. And I think also too, Joe, to your point, and I've heard you say it on the show otherwise too, like when you're playing a vintage guitar, that, you know, there's certain things that at the time they were production decisions, you know, certain components or materials that were used that, you know, after so many decades, it's a bit of a challenge, but it's those inconsistencies or those limitations, I should say, that we also are so in love with, you know, in a sense, we kind of love the chaos of a tube or a valve, as you call it, valve amp. you know what I mean? Like it's kind of a little bit of that, like introducing some of the organic, like unpredictable elements to it. And so that's all, I guess, part of what fires me up about this is the idea of, you know, working with this organic material that is inconsistent in and of itself and trying to draw like organic lines in it and also straight lines and the interplay of how all those things work together. So yeah, that's where my head is at, honestly, with all this stuff.
So did you have like a creative kind of, you know, woodworking background before you started building guitars, or was this a bit of a baptism of fire? Like, how did you, what were you doing that made you say, yeah, I, you know, I like guitars. I can make a guitar. I'm going to make a guitar.
Actually, that was almost the dialogue in my head. Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, it was a combination of factors, really. Like, for example, my family is a musical family. Like, that's what we did. That was very much one of the currencies in my family was, you know, like the instruments that you played. And my parents are big music fans. My brother and I grew up going to concerts with my family. And even still, like my extended family, uncles and, you know, grandparents, like everybody played some form of an instrument or sang or did something. Even my wife's family as well, you know, she came from a musical family. So music is just woven into the fiber of, you know, our families. And so growing up, my brother, my dad's a drummer. My brother and I both learned to play drums to begin with. So we were both drummers at the very start. And he took off playing guitar when he hit junior high. He was a few years older than me. And he was really good. He got really good really quick. And the deeper he got into guitar, the more it pushed me into drums. Because, you know, that way we could play together and do two different things. So I was a drummer, you know, I still am. But drums were the main thing. But the guitar always fascinated me. It was always like this was in the early 80s. Well, I was born in 80, but the, you know, going through the 80s and stuff where the guitars were these crazy colors and shapes, which we're starting to see come back, you know, with these, you know, these bright colors and you know, some of these throwback designs. But, you know, the guitar was this really mystifying, really enchanting, you know, instrument. So kind of watching my brother play and little by little, you know, I was interested in also how things worked, you know, so simple stuff like changing the strings and all that. It was a bit of a chore, maybe for him or anyone else, but, you know, some people really enjoy changing strings and that was like one of the things I liked doing. And my dad had an old guitar that needed some new tuners. And so, I probably did that the wrong way, but, you know, figuring that out was a lot of fun. And so anyway, as you know, that's the foundation. And then, by the time I got through high school and was in college, you know, I was an art major, studying graphic design and illustration and stuff. And, so in one of my art classes, it was a very short class that it was like, I had to just fulfill a requirement. I was already working full time, like school. I just needed to get done with school. I was just trying to get it over with. So I'm in this class and it was about writing for the visual arts. So it was how to write like an artist statement and also how to be like critical of, you know, other work. And so, you know, the class was kind of a chore. And we had to give an artist statement, like theoretically or, you know, whatever. And so I hadn't prepared for this thing at all. So I'm sitting in the class and people are going up to the front and giving their artist statement. And I'm starting to realize, oh man, I didn't even really think about this, which I don't ever recommend kids, you know, do your homework. But anyway, so it was just like you said, Jay, it was like that moment. It's like, well, hold on. I really like guitars and, you know, the design is very interesting and intriguing to me. Like, why not put those two together? And so I went up in front of the class and said, you know, more or less that I was going to design and build guitars. And it was funny because the response was really positive. Everyone was like very encouraging and interested in that. And I was like, wow, okay, I guess I said it. Now I got to do it.
Oh, of course, I'm doing it now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Most of my achievements in life have been through, like, you know, accidentally signing myself up to things that I didn't think I'd actually be able to pull through. So yeah, I completely relate to that.
Yeah. And that was it. You know, like, I was already dating my wife and working a lot. And so, like I said, I was just trying to get done with school. So, finished school, got married. We had a little place at first, so we didn't have the money or the space or the time or anything to really get into it, but it was still in the back of my mind. So a lot of those, you know, first few years were just doing a lot of research and digging and, you know, trying to look at it and saving up money and getting parts and building parts, casters and all that. And yeah, so that was essentially the combination of factors.
Wow. Well, what was the first body shape that you made out of it? Because you have three, right, in your current production line.
Yep. It all started with the Ashford. And interestingly enough, when reverb.com was very, very new, we were very fortunate. My dad, my brother and I, we we knew people that could get us into the NAMM show. So we'd love to go. we've been there many years. You know, incidentally.
To Summer NAMM or
no,
to the Winter NAMM?
No, the Winter Show, because in Southern California. So,
Is that where you're from? You're from California originally.
Originally,
oh,
yes.
Right. Okay. Right. Okay. Sorry, didn't realize that. Okay. Yeah.
So, Reverb at one point, like at least the first time I saw them, they were in the downstairs, you know, the Hall E. Like that's where a lot of the new, maybe smaller, or at least more specialized stuff often is at the NAMM show. And so they had their setup down there, and I was talking to one of the representatives, and we were just having a great chat about guitars and whatnot, and he was actually one of the first people to say, like, well, what would you build if you could just design something, you know, what you want? I think he was selling me on Reverb because it was like, you can build it and then you can sell it here, you know? Which is fine. You know, it was a fun, you know, encouraging like challenge. And so that's what I did. I took a sheet of plexiglass and, which is, you know, one of the things that I used to make, like routing templates, and I already had some templates of different shapes like Les Pauls and Jazzmasters and, you know, different standard. And so I wanted to come up with something that was kind of offset that kind of resembled a bit of a Jazzmaster, but didn't have like the offset, like tail end. I like the offset waist, but I wanted to put a tailpiece on it. So I wanted the back end to be symmetrical. And I also really liked the shape of like on a 335, or as you say, 335, 339, Gibson, you know, like the horns, you know, the shape of those horns. So the treble side horn, you know, so I just kind of borrowed from different like Gibson and Fender shapes. And I just traced it out on a piece of plexi with this, just with a Sharpie, you know, using these templates, and cut it out. And the whole experience, at first I didn't have a name for it. So I was just calling it the freehand guitar because, you know, I tried to draw it. I tried to keep everything as freehand and as organic as possible.
Oh, that's cool.
And so the Ashford was the first, and the response was pretty strong from that. Like, again, guys like Paul Roney, you know, he commented on my post on Instagram and was encouraging that. And so from there I thought, okay, this one is kind of involved. It's like a carved top. It's a semi hollow.
It's the most different out of your, like it's the most different out of the three guitars.
When you look at the three, it's certainly the one that's, I wouldn't have expected that to have been your first one. That looks like something that you would have built up to. So
yeah,
really what
yeah,
it seems like
it's
is
a carved top.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the F hole and everything. And really what it sounds like is you started really high and then you've just made life easier for yourself by bringing out, easier models.
Well, that's where the Rayburn came from because, you know, the Telecaster is such a brilliant design, like just in the construction of it, like from a manufacturing standpoint, you know, having the controls like top routed, loaded to the pick guards or scratch plate. Sorry. For the record, scratch plate is a much better name for it than a pick
guard. So we should sort of give people a peek behind the curtain. Before we recorded, we spent about 25 minutes talking about the difference in kind of American English and British English. And scratch plate, pick guard was one of the things that came up. Plectrum and picks. I've never noticed it. I've always used them interchangeably, but now I hear it out loud, it does seem to be a bit of a difference. So but yeah, very funny. Very funny.
So anyway, the Telecaster, you know, when you look at like how straightforward it is, you know, it's kind of got that slab body, you know, minimal contouring, you know, just a simple round over, especially like the single pickup version. So what I wanted to have was to make something that was affordable in the sense of materials and time, but also a little quicker production, you know? So the Rayburn was based off of that. I mean, it's easy to see the Telecaster influence in there, but what's great is it's almost like a Rorschach test. You know, some people look at it and they say, oh, it looks like a, you know, Silvertone this or a, you know, Epiphone like Coronet or, you know, these different things that maybe they're more familiar with. And that's cool. It's all in there, I guess. But the idea of that one was to be very straightforward, like single pickup, minimal contouring, and really have it be as kind of straightforward and stripped down as possible. Over time, you know, there are other variations have come up with Rayburns that, you know, I try to, you know, when I'm working with someone who's ordering one, I try to work out what they want and make sure it's right, but also try to stick to the, you know, the original purpose of the design. So there are times where it's like, you know, someone wants a 2-pickup Rayburn. And so we'll take off an option in order, you know, because the last thing I want to do is make some over the top Rayburn that has everything on it. Like, that's not the purpose of the Rayburn.
Yeah. Yeah.
Although absolutely. I just did something similar for Jalen or Jay. His is like double bound. It's got 2 pickups, but I mean, it's Jalen or Jay and that guy's incredible. Like, how do you say no to that guy? I mean, he's yeah. a wonderful human being. So, but you know, like working in double binding, but a single pickup version, you know, and that's part of the contrast that I really enjoy too, is being very selective about upgrades. And that's part of, I feel, from a design standpoint, like walking someone through the process, because some folks get excited and they just want, you know, they see everything that they've loved about a guitar, which could be a figured top or gold hardware or special inlays, or at least, and then they want it all on one guitar. And like, that's almost always a bad idea. So
like getting the option sheet and just ticking everything. Yeah.
So trying to limit that down and really getting selective and deliberate. And it's worked out very well so far. And then the middle one is like it's really more manifested now as a bass design, but originally it was a guitar design too, but the Devera. And so that was, I guess, the last of the three, at least, where it was kind of in between. So it was offset, but it's a solid body and it's 2-pickup. And, you know, so something to kind of bridge the gap between the Ashford and the Rayburn. And then more recently, you know, Emily and I partnered up on designing that Ainsley. So there is like a fourth model now. My website is so poorly out of date. I need to get it updated. Unfortunately, the software that I used to make it isn't available anymore. So I need to just totally start. But honestly, so much of what I've done has happened through social media and, you know, just other.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than 1 billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Dialogues. The website is more of a gallery, like not a lot of business comes to the website anyway. So the Ainsley obviously was a different approach altogether, where it was really trying to come up with something that was universally comfortable, you know, accounting for a lot of the women players that were making comments about the original designs on a lot of the popular guitars not being as ergonomic or comfortable. But trying to find the balance where it's something that is, you know, lightweight and comfortable and ergonomic, but doesn't look too bizarre. I figured
it's a fine line to tread.
It is. Yeah. And I figured, you know, cause like how wonderfully, you know, designed that St. Vincent guitar is, you know, for some of those same purposes, but you know, that shape is, you know, it's pretty dynamic.
It's definitely a Marmite shape. Like,
yeah, it's pretty stark, isn't it? Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
Whereas,
yeah.
I guess the Ainsley is probably how we got turned on to you and Emily Harris of the mm-hmm. Get Offset podcast. You know, and you know, Emily's great podcast as well, which some people should be listening to, of course. But yeah, like you say, like having that strong link to social media and just being open to trying new things and working with people, that is, I mean, it's clear from, you know, looking at people who've got your guitars. You know, you say you're working with Jay Leno Jay, that's great. And obviously Blake from the Tone Mob has got one of your guitars as well. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's sort of, you know, a great testament to your openness to working with other people and your openness to being, you know, just approachable and just, you make people want to pay attention to what you're doing, kind of, you know, not intentionally. And it's really nice. Like, you know, we think that what you're doing is great, man. So.
Oh, very kind. Yeah, thank you. I appreciate
I've
that.
Always, I really love the amount of diversity that people have been able to get into, or that you've managed to create tastefully in the custom shops. Everything from like recently you were posting a pop punk purple Ray-Ban that you're fitting a the bridge that you don't have to tune.
Evertune,
yeah, there we go. The Evertune, yeah, exactly, which is such a more modern version of your guitars. And then, you know, even like when I saw, I think one of the first Ray-Bans I saw was like a single pickup one, and I always wanted to ask, it had three controls and a switch, but it was a mm-hmm. single pickup Ray-Ban. What did it all do?
Yeah, and it's still funny because right now, like, just being a solo mission, just me by myself, trying to do this and working very slowly, you know, doing, it's like a part-time job. So it's not my full-time, thing. I only have so many hours to dedicate to this. So it's like each particular guitar is really, really significant. And it represents, just because the process takes long enough. And there's a lot of dialogue even before we've started making any sawdust, you know, and it's cool because there's a story so far. There's a story behind each one, and man, when the day comes when I'm, you know, just cranking these out and they're all just meaningless and, you know, just a, you know, like a, just cranking them out, that's really going to be a sad day. So anyway, as far as yeah, that purple one, that's Brian Gower of the Tone Jerks. That's for him.
I was. If you had like given me the option to guess who that was for, that was absolutely who I was going to assume it was for.
Right.
So that's awesome.
It's great because he picked the color, and it's cool because his other guitars, he's got one I think that was like a real soft pink and a really soft blue on another one. So this kind of soft purple, it's going to fit because their music isn't soft, and I love that contrast. And he's a big fan of the Evertune, and he asked me, he's like, "Well, would you be okay with doing an Evertune?" And it's like, sure. And you know, don't get me wrong, like the reason why I have specific shapes is so, you know, to help kind of mitigate that anything and everything type of mentality, you know.
Yeah, it's, sure.
From a design perspective, you know, being a graphic designer, I wasn't a good one, but that was my job. But, you know, working with graphic designers, like your portfolio is really like your calling card, you know, it's your resume. It has so much to do with defining your work and your style. And it's tough if you leave that open to other people's requests, then they're putting your portfolio together for you. So it's very much an agreement of like what fits within my aesthetic and what do I want to kind of support and encourage, you know, from a design standpoint, but then also how do we make it unique to the owner? And so something like an Evertune, it's a bit more work and, you know, we figured that out in the end, but, I'm not opposed to it. I don't know how popular it's going to be going forward. It's a cool, yeah. cool, you know, piece of hardware. And, you know, I found it very interesting, but it didn't seem to like throw off what we're doing because the guitar only has one pickup and it's got one knob and an on and off switch. So for the complexity of the bridge, we're balancing that out with simplicity of, you know, the other things. So,
that's kind of cool.
I didn't see that as a conflict.
It kind of works on the Ben Wyman ESP as well. And that's quite a retro styled ESP anyway. It's even though the Evertune's a very modern looking bridge, I kind of think you get away with it on the classic stuff.
Yeah, like it doesn't seem out of place too much to me. I mean, it definitely looks a bit modern, but it's helpful too to not get kind of stuck into being a purely retro, you know, vibe or a purely modern vibe. I like the balance and the interplay and the contrast or whatever you want to call it of putting those two elements together, which has a lot to do with why, like, I don't do a lot of inlays. You know, it's really just mostly two dots on a fretboard. You know, a lot of simple touches that are there to visually simplify things so that we can go somewhere like in Evertune.
You definitely have some other modern twists to your guitars, things like contoured heels, which is, you know, quite a popular one. I guess that's kind of the only modern contour, sort of thinking about it.
Yeah, there's definitely, and you know, trying to work the contour lines into the flowing lines, like but let me cover off before I get down that road. It's okay. The single pickup, the one that you're asking about with the three knobs and the switch, that was a collaboration of my very good friends Ko Schneider and Leon Wright and myself. Ko Schneider, he is a he's on the Flippin' Flippers podcast, because you know everybody's mm-hmm. on a podcast. Flippin' Flippers podcast with his friend Paul, who also has a Rayburn, but Ko is a wonderful like idea guy. He's got all these fantastic ideas, and he knows a lot of people, and he's wonderful to work with. And so he threw this idea to me. He's like, "Hey, what if we put a built-in fuzz in the guitar?" Which has been done before, but you know, I, like the ones that I had heard in the past, it wasn't all that practical. It was cool, but like the sound wasn't like super great. And it was like, "Yeah, that sounds like fun, but it would have to be a really good fuzz."
Is this the Pelican Noiseworks fuzz?
And so so he's like, well, I know Leon, you know, and this is the Pelotar had been around for maybe a couple years, a year or two at this point. And I didn't know Leon, and he was like some sort of mythical wizard figure. And I was like, oh, you know Leon? And so he introduced us. And so the idea was to take half of the Pelotar and put it on a smaller, like, circuit board that could be mounted kind of roughly where the neck pickup is, under the scratch plate. And so we worked out kind of some ideas, and so Leon was going to build a prototype pedal. So he ended up taking half of the Pelotar, made some modifications, kind of set some different controls, and he put it in this enclosure with one big gigantic knob on the top of it, and he sent it to Ko to try out. And I think that gigantic knob was just something that he had. He was like, oh, cool, this will work, and just threw it on there. so that ended up being the half horse, if you're familiar with his pedals. So the half horse with some the actual enclosed pedal version, I think, has some different components. But the circuit that's in the guitar itself is it's essentially a modified half horse, which came about through this whole, you know, deal. I don't know much about fuzz pedals. So I said, you, Ko and Leon, work it out, figure out what sounds good, and then I'll figure out how to put it in the guitar. So with their help, we ended up doing that. And so the goal is to do a limited run of seven. So far, there are three in the wild and two more lined up. So we're getting near the end. But the colors were essentially, there's a blue and a white that are derived from the pedal itself. And then the one that you saw of mine, it's a Shoreline Gold, just because we kind of like that color. And I think as a prototype, that was a color I had, and I just wanted to do a Shoreline. So we have three colors. Limited run of seven. I think, you know, there's really only going to be a couple left. But yeah, that switch turns the fuzz on, and then the controls are, you know, master volume, master tone. And, it's the, I think on the pedal, it's called the sounds knob. So it kind of changes the, I don't know what you call it, like the bias of the fuzz. So rolled right. back all one way, it's very like thick and woolly. The other way, it's really gated and kind of spitty.
Oh, cool.
So that guitar is a ton of fun. We took it to, like an amp show one time, so we were demoing different amps, and people didn't know there was a fuzz built into it. And so you flip that switch, and people kind of turn their heads like, wait, who brought the pedal in here?
Great.
That's where that guitar came from.
I am very into the idea of guitars with built-in fuzzes. I think Viren Saku guitars from...
Finland.
Yes, I was gonna just take a pop. Just gonna take a pop at a country then. But yeah, they did one with a built-in fuzz recently, which I thought was absolutely fantastic. I love the idea. I don't know why it's not something that's in more things. Do you know what? Actually, recently on eBay, do you know Gibson made an EB3 bass in 1962 with a built-in fuzz, the EB3F, and
what?
They made 25 of them, and one of them came up on eBay the other week, and I was bidding on it, and it finished at a stupid time, and I forgot, and I lost the bidding, and it went for only a little bit over £1,000. That's criminal.
Crikey.
That must be one of the last ones still around, but apparently it was awful. But you know.
It meant, I bet there's people out there who are just like, and Kevin, I'm sure that, you know, your guitar is going to be a part of this at some point. Someone out there is going to be like, listen, I absolutely love the sound of this fuzz, but I cannot move away from my Fender Telecaster. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to buy the guitar and just put it on my pedal board, and I'm just going to, you know, turn on the fuzz when I need to, you know, they'll rewire it for a push-push pot or something. But,
That's funny. Well, we were talking about contours and contoured heels too. And that was another design decision, because, you know, function is so much part of design, visual design. You know, when you look at, you know, a lot of just basic tools, someone who maybe doesn't know how to use the tool might be able to look at it and say, okay, well, this part is sharp, or this part is heavy, this part looks like you put your, you know, something that you would hold in your hand or whatever, based off of the visual form of it. And so for me, it always bothered me seeing guitars with like a rectangular heel, even though that's an area that I can't really play in. It's like, that's a part that your hand is supposed to go, and on a totally like, you know, organic curvilinear shape, like the one spot that looks like a rectangular block is the one spot that's supposed to like go in the palm of your hand. That just didn't make sense to me. So, that's like a standard deal on all of my guitars, is to round those off and make sure that it kind of flows into the lines. The same with the contours. And there's no criticism to guitars that maybe, you know, draw a straight line and then it chamfers back and then that's the contour. I mean, if it works for those, but all of my the contours on my guitars, it's such a fun part of the process that I love, that I don't have templates for any of those. It's a matter of drawing the line, just kind of how it feels and
that's great.
Where it's flowing, and then I kind of carve to that line, and it's such a cathartic part of the process that I really, really enjoy putting in the body contour. So that Ainslie, that one's got kind of a slightly different contour set, where it's mostly the back of the upper portion, not just like where a regular like belly cut would be, but, you know, further forward towards the neck. Like a lot of that is chamfered away, almost like a direct opposite of the forearm contour. So they kind of have this opposing, you know, relationship, both sides of it, just to try to allow, flatten that space out and allow for different, you know, body types and sizes and figures, and, you know, so that there's nothing jarring up in that area.
Actually, I love that design. It's incredibly tasteful. It looks fantastic doing a contour like that.
Thank you. Yeah. So it's just trying to make it work visually and functionally. And so, yeah, you know, trying to just draw the lines together, you know, like that's the game, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so. I love the back of the headstock as well, because you paint the back of your headstocks and then pinstripe a line down them, which is, I didn't see too many other people doing that. I can't think of any other brand off the top of my head, although I'm sure you're going to tell me there are loads of people that do that.
Yeah, there are people that, they call it a stinger. You know, you see them on old Gibsons and other guitars. And it's, I don't know, it's another way to kind of move the eye on, you know, these wonderful lines that are all over these guitars. And that black stripe running down the neck, that's actually built into the neck. It's just a black veneer that is sandwiched between the two pieces, which is really, really helpful, not just aesthetically, but also with the construction, because the way that I do an angled headstock is the way that a lot of people do it, where it's called a scarf joint. Where if you're familiar, then cut me off, but essentially you cut it at the whatever degree you're going to do. Mine's an 11. So you cut like an 11 degree angle in the piece of wood, and you flip the top part over and glue it back on at that angle. So rather than cutting an angle out of a single piece, which can actually weaken the area, especially like if you have truss rod adjustment in that area. So the thinnest part of the neck, it's angled, and there's a chunk taken out of the middle. Like it's a triple whammy on, you know, that's why you see so many of those classic like headstock breaks at the, you know, at the nut for an angled headstock. So mine are glued in, which gives it a much stronger joint, but aligning those two pieces is great when you have a center line that's just permanently part of the piece. Also, when it comes to shaping the neck, I'd have to draw a center line, and then, you know, you work one side and you work the other, and then eventually you would scrape or sand away that center line, and then you redraw it. And it was like, it was nice to just have one built in. So that stripe is, it's not painted on. I have a Gretsch that has that line in it, and that was the inspiration there. It just looks so classy, just that nice straight line coming down. So the Stinger is a great way to kind of translate the lines visually, you know, to that one point, which moves down the back of the neck.
It's really funny, though, because, you know, you mentioned earlier about how there are aspects of guitars that are just kind of there, and they were there for kind of manufacturing processes, and that's something that we've all come to love. And that's kind of what you've done there, is you've used that black line as a kind of functional part of the manufacturing process of the guitar, but that's something that we have all picked up on as a really nice kind of you know, signature of one of your guitars. And that's, you know, that's really nice that you've got your own kind of like little quirk there through functionality more than anything else.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it's kind of a win-win, I think, in my opinion.
Well, that actually brings us pretty much up to time for this week's episode of the Friday Special. It has been absolutely wonderful to have you on the podcast, Kevin. Thank you so much for joining us. And listener, if you are not aware of Equits Guitars, then, you know, absolutely check them out. You can check them out on equitsguitars.com and view that the wonderful website made on defunct software. but you know, also check out all this stuff on social media. I have a fantastic time flicking through Kevin's Instagram, because there's loads of cool stuff there. And, you know, as far as kind of retro come modern, you know, really unique custom shop guitars go, they really don't start at a lot of money if you're looking for your next super cool retro instrument. So yeah, you can of course check out more Guitar Nerd stuff over on the Patreon, on patreon.com/guitar nerds. You can join us on any of the major social platforms with @guitar nerds, and we're going to be back next week with our regular episode on Wednesday and another Friday Special on Friday. Kevin, thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, well, thank you so much for having me on here. It's really an honor to be included in this, so thank you.
Oh, not at all.
We'll definitely drag you back at some point, and it will.
Oh, yeah, we will
do our absolute most to make it feel like it is a chore rather than
a Please do. I look forward to that.
We'll see you next week for more of this guitar nerdery. Farewell.
Cheers, gang.
Cheers.